Welcome to Native America Calling. From Albuquerque, I'm Monica Brain. The Keystone XL pipeline project is dead, at least for the time being. Tribes in the path of the proposed project are cheering, but already some elected leaders are working to undo the decision by President Joe Biden to cancel the pipeline permit. It's the latest effort over the last decade to build the conduit to transport millions of gallons of oil through the middle of the country. We'll get perspectives on the latest development and hear where and when the pipeline could resurface. That's coming up right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Whether the Dakota Access Pipeline continues to operate is now a question for President Joe Biden as well as federal courts. The D.C. Court of Appeals has ruled that the pipeline is operating illegally without a full environmental impact study. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe has asked a D.C. Circuit judge to issue a permanent injunction. Victoria Wicks has more.
A D.C. Circuit judge ordered last summer that the Dakota Access Pipeline had to be shut down and drained by August 5th. DAPL operators and the Army Corps of Engineers immediately appealed and successfully asked for the shutdown to be reversed while the appeals court reviewed the case. That court has now confirmed that the Army Corps illegally permitted the pipeline in 2017 under former President Donald Trump, who put a halt to environmental studies ordered by the Obama administration. Jan Hasselman of Earth Justice represents the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. He says the tribe has already started the process of getting a court-ordered injunction in the D.C. Circuit, but he says the change in presidential administrations opens another avenue.
We're calling on the Biden administration to shut this pipeline down until these legal problems can be resolved.
Hasselman says the appellate court confirms that the pipeline should not have been built. It never went through the stringent review required by the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, and as a result, it is now operating without a permit.
Should the pipeline be allowed to operate while the environmental review is going on? And the only answer to that question, the only possible answer, is no. That's not the way the law works. You're not supposed to build first and study later.
The D.C. courts say the Army Corps failed to consider the hazards of running a pipeline through the waters of the Owyhee Reservoir, which tribes rely on for drinking, hunting, fishing, industry, agriculture, and cultural practices. I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
The Fairbanks, Alaska Native community recently gathered for a vigil to increase awareness about missing people. Families shared stories, thanked those who are helping search for answers, and called for new action. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Eight individuals, including five Alaska Native people, have been missing in the Fairbanks area since last May. In the latest case, 54-year-old Stephen Jellum of Stevens Village was last seen leaving his sister Lori's apartment in Fairbanks January 9th. Lori Jellum spoke at the vigil.
We know all of you are hurting for your family, and so are we. I just want to thank everybody for being here and helping us.
There's talk on social media that the missing may be victims of a serial killer. Former Tanana Chiefs Conference Village Public Safety Officer Program Coordinator Jody Potts, who helped organize the vigil, said the number of missing is unusually high.
We don't want to make any assumptions that any of these missing person cases are connected somehow, but we also don't want to make any assumptions that they're not connected. And so with that, that's why we are asking to create a Fairbanks Missing Persons Task Force.
There were also calls for the FBI to be brought in and for more public transparency about the status of investigations. Police, city officials, and Native leaders plan to meet to discuss the situation. Meantime, Potts urged people to look out for one another.
If you see someone in a vulnerable position, check on them. Don't just keep going. Stay aware. Watch over each other. Masik, be safe.
For National Native News, I'm Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Alaska.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Now, National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme. Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the SAMHSA-sponsored Opioid Response Network, working across the nation to address the opioid crisis in tribal communities. Information and support at aaip.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, joining you through Skype. Tribes in the path of the proposed Keystone XL oil pipeline cheered when President Joe Biden canceled the permit for the project. Members of the Fort Peck, Assiniboine, and Sioux tribes in Montana applaud the decision because the pipeline was set to cross the Missouri River upstream from the reservation's water intake. Like many tribes, the Oglala Sioux tribe opposes the pipeline's environmental threat to original treaty land in South Dakota. Biden's action is the latest in a start and stop progress for the controversial project intended to pump millions of gallons of oil from Canada to the Gulf Coast. President Barack Obama denied the original permit. President Donald Trump then revived the project. Some members of Congress are currently working on legislative action to counter Biden's decision. Today, we'll get perspective on what Biden's decision means and whether it is a major blow or just a minor speed bump in the plans by pipeline backers. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call to 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us now is Faith Spotted Eagle. She is an elder, grandmother, and coordinator for the Brave Heart Society and chair of the Ihonktewa Treaty Committee, and she is Ihonktewa Dakota. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Faith.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you, Monica.
You know, I remember you were on the show about 6 or 7 years ago talking about the pipeline, and you've been working on it, on this issue, for longer than that. So let's talk about what compelled you to take up this struggle.
Okay. I think the original movement that I was involved in was being born along the Missouri River. It was the movement of the river. And at 2 years old, I witnessed the killing of my white swan community along the Missouri. And as you know, including Justin's land up at Fort Peck, every single dam was put on the Missouri River main stem on a Native community, and essentially we were homeless. I was 2 years old, and I witnessed the dismantling of an old log house, 2 years old, but I remember it. I couldn't talk. I didn't understand, but I could feel the sadness and anger. And at 12 years old, my dad told me, he said, "My girl, you're going to have to do something about this." And I told him, I said, "I'm 12. I don't know what to do." And he said, "You'll figure it out." So I figured it out. It's been a lifelong movement for me of protecting and defending the water. And it fits into the role of women. We have the first medicine in the womb. We use water for cooking. We use water for ceremonies. So it just became a natural part of my life of standing up. And when the Keystone Pipeline, I heard about it 13 years ago at a treaty meeting in Rapid City. It was hosted by our relatives up there and Mario Gonzalez, well-known treaty attorney who helped with the Black Hills case, said, "You better watch out." He said the KXL pipeline is coming from the northwest, from Montana. He said it's going to be tough. And so I paid attention because a couple of years prior, we had filed suit against the Keystone Pipeline or the pipeline in eastern South Dakota. We failed. It went to court in Minnesota, and Hillary Clinton was involved, and it said that we didn't expound on the treaty. But in retrospect, it was good that we didn't pursue that one because the setting wasn't right, and there wasn't as much strong treaty language there. And so when this other situation came up, we mobilized and began fighting, as I said, 13 years ago, and we created a just many, many water protectors, land protectors, water people that might be listening. I give my hand to you. I raise my hands up to you for doing this good fight together. But we began by realizing allies are really important. And me being 72 years old and going through the 60s battles, the 70s battles, you know, all the fights that we've been in, including the historical battles, we realized that the most important thing was to ally and to cooperate. And that's easier said than done. But the first major gathering was the International Treaty to Protect the Sacred at Ihangtuan Territory. And we created, the government said we could no longer do treaties, but we decided we can do our own internal treaties. So this treaty was to protect the sacred against the KXL and the tar sands. So we thought of our people up north and the people with Idle No More who had fought back. So we created this treaty as an open-ended invitation to work together. And at that time, we invited, I remember it was the first time I heard about Jane Kleb down in Nebraska, and I called her up and I said, Jane, we're allying. Can you bring your farmers up? And so she brought them up. It was a very emotional gathering. They cried about losing their land, and I remember somebody in the audience jokingly said, you're the new Indians. Now you know about losing land. And so we taught them how to be teased, and they signed the treaty. We had Tom Poorbear from the Oglalas, who signed as the vice chair, our chairman, and 10 First Nations up in Canada. Reuben George from the Tsleil-Waututh, who was really fighting Kinder Morgan, many, many other leaders, and we had the Pawnee come up. It was actually the revival of a peace treaty that was forced upon us between the Pawnee Nation and the Ihangtuan. So we had the Walter Echohawk came up, very esteemed lawyer, and he helped our lawyers and the grassroots craft this treaty. We signed it. We went forward, and Tom Poorbear said, you know what? I remember he used to call me girl. He said, hey, girl, this is only the first step. And I said, you betcha. And he and I and other people testified in snowstorms, you know, permit hearings just over and over again. And then he hosted a meeting in Rapid City. He said, I'll tag team and take it from here, and the Oglalas will host the Rapid City meeting. So we went from there. From there, we went. By then, we had revived the Cowboy Indian Alliance, which actually was started in the 70s. I have to not forget that. It was not original with us. It was started with many of our people in the Black Hills who were fighting the uranium, and some of those have passed on now. Rosalie Little Thunder was part of this movement. She's passed on. Many other pipeline fighters have passed on now. But from there, we begin to talk about what are we going to do on the national level. So we organized the Reject and Protect, and we decided that we were going to go to Washington. We worked with Arvel, our pipe keeper, Looking Horse. He kept the prayers going at home. He chose to keep the land strong and stay at home during our action. And we had many people mobilize and take horses to Washington, D.C., and we rode across the Washington Mall, around it, and to the Capitol. And we requested a meeting with Obama. He sent his employees to meet with us in one of the executive buildings. And when we went in there, we had several chairmen, the Oglala chairman, the Rosebud chairman, and all of us grassroots societies and grandmothers. And we told him, we said, thank you for the invite, but we need to talk to you. We don't want to talk to your underlings. And so we left the meeting and we walked out and we said, if this is nation to nation, we need to see our relative Obama. And so that really propelled us into the national, international arena of what this fight was about. And after that, many, many actions came about. We just constantly. And then we created a national promise to protect with 350.org. We have 40,000 people who have signed on to, if necessary, come to South Dakota. And we said, oh, no, we can't handle that. That's too much, you know, but we appreciate you in mind and spirit, because this was, you know, after, remember, KXL started way before Standing Rock. So KXL was able to,
right.
And we made a vow that we weren't into getting arrested. We were getting into use a very finite weapons of war to protect our lands. And so we did, there were a few people that got arrested in the very beginning, and that was to bring attention to it. And I have to give my hands up to her, Deb Whiteplume, Mushke, Deb Whiteplume, and Tom Poorbear, Pat Spears, some of them went to Marty Kobane, went to Washington to the Capitol building early on, and that was maybe 12 years ago. Out of that, we created direct action training teams all across Ocheche Chapoin. We traveled from community to community training people and telling them it was really important that we stay united and that we not engage in some of the lessons that we've learned that, you know, we're not more, everybody in that sacred circle of life and organizing is not more important. In the sacred circle, you're not above or below anybody, because sometimes because of our trauma, we get involved in founder's syndrome and firstitis, and we say, oh, we're the ones that started it and no one else can come in. But we needed everyone else. We absolutely, and we don't need to out-Indian each other. That was some of the principles, the principles that we had.
I don't know why that makes me chuckle so much. I love the word firstitis and founder syndrome. It's probably like a Western concept that we've adopted through the time.
Right, right. Yeah, because when you're out on the battlefield, you can't be preening. You'll get shot. And so that's what, as an elder, I've been shot. I literally have been beat physically during the AIM era. I was in a dangerous place because people, like, you know how with the January 6th action, with Wounded Knee number 2 going on, we were very much targets in South Dakota, and I was attacked by five young white men, and I got my leg broken. And after that happened, I thought, okay, I got my leg broken. You can't hurt me anymore. You know, I already hurt. So I'm going forward. So I learned a lot of that, and I know that we had to indigenize and return to old, new teachings about how we work together as allies. And of course, when we went to Standing Rock, we tried out some of those. Some worked, some failed, but we just keep on learning. But the ultimate thing is, in the organizing against the KXL, is it was a spiritual activism. Every single gathering that we partook in was preceded by ceremony and asking for direction.
And Faith, I want to talk to you more about that. I just thank you so much for giving us this very brief history of the fight against the Keystone XL pipeline. We're going to go to a short break, and after the break, we're going to talk more with Faith Spotted Eagle about the efforts to shut down the pipeline and what President Biden's order, executive order, means for the future of the pipeline. But we want to include your voice into the conversation as well. Give us a call at 1-800-996-2848. What do you think about the pipeline? Brighton Gwiss grew up on the powwow trail. Now the Canadian dancer and musician is blending traditional powwow beats with hip-hop and other contemporary rhythms, making a sound all his own. He's a Juno and Indigenous Music Award nominee and is our January Music Maker. Tune in to hear Brighton Gwiss on the next Native America Calling.
How me taki e piki? 2021 wo awatsi e tse dea gilaka huo. Wanale o makaki taku waste e chungo na wichozani tokahea eki ginakai o. La kol wichozani o tiel yayo e sama sole a chihantas. Nish lil yayo, healthcare.gov, nish lil mas apkayo, 1-800-318-2596. Le wot khaniki Medicare to Medicaid o tietan hiu apelo. Ho, heche tuelo.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. We're getting perspective on President Biden's decision to cancel the Keystone XL pipeline permit. Is it a fatal blow, or are organizers waiting until the political winds are in their favor again? Join our conversation. The number to get into it is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Before the break, we were talking with Faith Spotted Eagle, and she gave us this great history of the organizing of all of the people involved in fighting the Keystone XL pipeline. Faith, I want to give you a moment. Anything else you want to share about, you know, how we arrived at this moment?
I think the important thing to acknowledge is the amount of grassroots people, the young people, and the players who came into these type of movements in a different era. Because us old folks, we had our times, we had our movements, and this provided the space. Like Standing Rock did for them to give voice to all of the things that they've been told in growing up, that you have to take back the land, you have to defend the people. And so this has been a skirmish, and it was a major victory. It was a little bit different than the battles that we've had historically, because this time we had many, many allies. We relearned how to communicate with white people that we fought with all the time, and we continue to fight with because the racism is there. But we created some bridges where we could cross that stream and say, "This, we're both drinking out of the stream, and it's going to be gone." And so I think that that was a big, big part, was the grassroots, because in the beginning, the elected leadership didn't have the opportunity to get on because they have a lot on their plate, and they really didn't know what was going on. And so the grassroots, the grandmas, the societies, the traditional people, the treaty people came forth. And that was a great thing because we're still alive. According to the hierarchy of the government, they will only talk to tribal chairmen, and they created that type of structure. But we're still out here in the borderlands. We're still here, and our voice is loud and clear with this victory.
Mm. And, you know, Faith, so President Biden signed this order. He canceled the permit. And what does this mean now? Is it, can you relax? Can you take a nap? You know, take a break?
No. I am taking a few days break with my grandchildren. And I think it's kind of like being at a rodeo. The gate is open. You know, we caught the steer. We tied it up, and it's on the ground right now. But those ropes need to be tied. And so I think what has done is, I learned this from Standing Rock. When we came home, we began to focus on the larger picture of bioregion development, that we have to protect every single tributary. We have to know what is on our land. We have to inventory it, survey it, and exert regulatory power. Because if we're sovereign, we have to have regulatory power. Otherwise, we're going to spend the rest of our lives testifying in permit hearings. We need to be exerting presence in every single water permit hearing, and that takes infrastructure. And so I am so thankful that I live in a time where you, as an Eapaha, a camp crier, can give our voice all across Turtle Island. We didn't have that in the camps. We had to wait for the word to pass. But now we've got opportunities, and we can't blow it. We have to heal from our anger and our rage when we haven't been able to cooperate. And now we've got an opportunity to really, and even better yet, we have a relative in the Department of Interior. What a grand time to be alive. And I'm so glad at my age I can be part of this. And so, but, and then don't forget to continue to mentor and teach that. We have to create institutional memory that every time we do something, whether it's water testing, whether it's blocking things at the state legislature, because that's the other battle that we have. As we speak, the state of South Dakota is exerting a water plan. Again, it's a violation of treaty rights. So I have a list of 100 that I have to go back to, just like everybody else has. And so it's exciting because we've got something under our belt right now.
Mm. Well, we're talking about the Keystone XL pipeline today, and if you want to get in on the conversation, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-8. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. I did reach out to TC Energy, the company behind the Keystone XL pipeline, and invited them to be on the show today, but I didn't hear back from them as of the start of the show today. And I want to invite you to the conversation. All opinions are welcome here, whether you supported the pipeline or you don't support the pipeline. We want to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Let's go to the phones. We've got Elizabeth in Bridger, South Dakota. Hey there, Elizabeth. Thanks for giving us a call today. What do you want to share?
Well, I want to say hi to Auntie Faith. Thank you for being a voice for us again. And then I just wanted to say that I really appreciate the fact that Biden, not just that he rescinded the permit, but that he continues to include tribes in the national conversation. Every time I've heard them speak, they include us. And that's never happened before with, I don't think, any presidency. So I'm really grateful for that. And then also the appreciation that, you know, I've heard, you know, people grumbling about the loss of jobs, but where we live in Bridger, we're right there on the front line. You know, that's right where the pipeline was supposed to come through, right where we live. And so to me, it's like when that pipe was going to break, and it was going to break if it ever got into the ground, it was going to break right by us. We know that. We were told that. We were shown that. And so to me, rescinding that pipeline saved an entire community of lives. Without that river, we would that was certain death for us. And so I just, anybody that supported the pipeline, I want to ask them, you know, how many of our lives are worth a few jobs? And I'm just, you know, just so grateful, eternally grateful that that pipeline will not be going into the ground.
Elizabeth, thanks for giving us a call. Faith, you want to say anything to Elizabeth?
Yeah, I think she's right on about being in the national conversation. And I just saw the order that came out with the consultation direction that it has to be beyond meaningful. But the thing to keep in mind, when you say consultation, that's a domination word. Consultation means that the decision has already been made. So what we need to seek is free, prior, and informed consent. We have to get consent. It's almost like a rape word. You know, I didn't get consent to get raped at our rivers or our lands. And so we have to remain vigilant. Thank you, Elizabeth, for mentioning that.
And sorry about that. My dog is barking. The joys of hosting from home today. Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth, for your call. We really appreciate that. And Faith, for your words. You know, Faith, I was thinking about what Elizabeth was talking about with the river. And I know that there's been some efforts up in Yurok territory and in Maori territory to establish rivers, giving rivers personhood. And I've wondered if you've thought about this as an action towards protecting the water.
Yes, we actually have been working on it for about a year, year and a half, and we were able to work closely with the Cultural Conservancy, and we've been doing research and looking at how the ones that have declared it. Now, remember, when the Maori did it, they did it out of a settlement, so it's a little bit different. Each situation is different. Some of the language is constructed for a legal battle. Some is constructed from Mother Nature, so you have to examine closely. And ours, with the Missouri River, which is very, very long, we would have to build consensus and it doesn't make sense to only protect the rights of a short stretch of the river where we live. So we're going to be convening some meetings with the Ocheti Shakoi all the way up to Fort Peck, and I'm glad Justin is on the phone because we need to have conversations, but we do want to exert those rights because the river is our relative. It's also, in Western language, it's a traditional cultural property, which is a federal tenant that needs protection. It is traditional, it is cultural, and it is our property. Thank you.
I imagine it's a little bit hard, though, to explain all of that to people, particularly, you know, EPA officials or folks who don't quite really get, you know, how natives live their lives, particularly traditional people. Faith, have you ever felt just outright frustrated and constantly explaining yourself over and over again?
I think in my age with non-native people, I've become a little bit more blunt because I don't need to do their emotional labor. Because what I'm doing, and I quit talking to people on airlines because I have to do a workshop, Indian 101. And so, sorry, but so I just get to the point. And usually where the point lives is in the heart. If you can talk to their spirit and their heart, they, even though they might be racist, they can get it. And sometimes there are some that you can't waste the time on. So that leaves us to do the inner work of developing our regulatory power. So we have to be working on our water codes. We have to, being sovereign is having regulatory power over where we reside. And so in the meantime, rather than convincing them to be good people, we can be doing a lot of things where now that there's a change in thought that they're going to have to be good people because of law and policy change. So it's a pretty exciting time, but it really is the art of war, Native style, Indian style. A lot of that is allying between the elected officials, the treaty people, the grassroots, and going beyond misogyny. We have to realize that we've been impacted by when the patriarchs left, they left some in place. And so that was part of our healing here in KXL and Standing Rock. But we can do it.
Well, I want to add some more voices to the conversation. Joining us now from the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation in South Dakota is Madonna Thunderhawk. She's a tribal liaison with the Lakota People's Law Project and a community worker with Standing Strong Grandmothers, and she is Lakota. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Madonna.
Thank you. Good morning.
I was thinking what Faith was saying about being blunt. And, you know, that's something that you have also done in the past where you, you know, say it like it is. And so when you think about saying it like it is, when it comes to this pipeline, what do you say?
Well, first of all, I just want you to know how much I've enjoyed this program so far. I mean, Faith, you know, talking, and then Elizabeth, two strong women that, you know, I have a real strong voice for all of us, so I really appreciate listening to them talk. Yeah, well, okay. With me, it's, you know, when you get to be elder, I mean, you know, I'm turned 80 this year, you know, so the fact that I'm still here to witness, you know, what's going on, and it's just amazing to me. But yeah, you know, when you get on, you know, in years, you just don't have time, you know. I'm still in a hurry, you know, to get things done. And I'm not can't waste time, you know, trying to bring people along, educate, like she said, Indian 101, you know. It's just that, you know, come on, let's just get on it, you know. Let's move ahead.
Are you celebrating this victory, or, you know, the cancellation of the pipeline? Or are you, you know, like cautiously excited about it?
Cautiously. But of course, I'm happy. You know, I'm just, yeah, I live to see it, you know, and that's good. But of course, you know, it's just like, this is America and politics and all of that, you know, and so, you know, cautious. We have to be cautious, you know. But at the same time, you know, it's just another hurdle, you know. The struggle's still there. As long as we're land-based, we're going to be faced with, you know, fighting for our water and our land and treaty rights, you name it. You know, those things don't change. That's just ongoing because we're land-based, you know, so that's what we're going to have to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to add one more voice to the conversation. Joining us now is Justin Dupree. He is a tribal executive board member for the Assiniboine and Sioux tribes of the Fort Peck Reservation, and he's also a member of the tribe. Welcome to Native America Calling, Councilman Dupree.
Monica, thank you. Good morning to Faith and Madonna as well.
So how close would the Keystone XL pipeline come to the Fort Peck Reservation?
So this pipeline would have skirted the western boundary of our reservation, and the proposed crossing site would have been within a quarter of a mile off our reservation. And the exact location of this is where the Milk River and Missouri River meet, which is the southwestern border of our reservation. And for Fort Peck, our southern border is the Missouri River, and our western boundary is the Milk River. So it was a pretty significant area for a whole lot of reasons.
And so if there was, just, you know, for some context for our listeners, if there was a pipeline break, and we're talking about a different kind of oil here from, like, for example, the oil that's going through the Dakota Access Pipeline. This is oil that comes from the tar sands in Canada. So what would a break mean for your water in Fort Peck? And what did the pipeline company tell you about how they would sort of mitigate any issues, you know, that would happen because of a break?
Well, in terms of the pipeline having communication with the tribes, we honestly haven't had much direct contact with that company. But, you know, for Fort Peck tribes, we have a water treatment plant not too far downstream from the proposed pipeline crossing on the Missouri River. Our concern, one of our biggest concerns, was when a leak was to happen, how would this take place for approximately 28,000 people who currently receive water off our water treatment plant, receive fresh water? You know, we take water off the Missouri River, and we have friends and relatives downstream who also have similar concerns, whether that's tribal or non-tribal. But yeah, this is one of our biggest concerns up here at Fort Peck.
So when you heard the news of President Biden canceling the permit, are you excited about this?
You know, there's a little relief, but like I said, you know, it was mentioned earlier, Faith and Madonna both talked about there are going to be various people keep coming at tribes from different avenues, and, you know, we just got to be prepared.
Yeah, so Justin, tell us a little bit more about some of the efforts to prevent the pipeline from being, you know, built near your reservation.
You know, again, it was mentioned earlier about the grassroots people. You know, we used our tribe. We used a lot of court and litigation processes. But again, we've opposed this project from the beginning of the discussions. And again, we've been in litigation for quite some time. I'm glad to hear the current decision to stop this project. And there are a lot of far too many people to name that have always been at the forefront of this discussion. But those who are listening, good job.
All right. We are talking about the Keystone XL pipeline. We're going to go to a short break. After the break, I want to talk a little bit more about some of the things that would come with the pipeline, including man camps, as well as some efforts to work on other pipeline or some other pipelines that folks have concerns about that maybe haven't been canceled. There's still time. If you want to get in on the conversation, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. You can tweet us at 1-800-99-NATIVE as well. We'll be right back.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the SAMHSA-sponsored Opioid Response Network, working with tribal communities across the nation to address the opioid crisis. Breaking the cycle starts with preventing opioid misuse, treating opioid use disorder with medications and counseling, and recovery support during all phases of recovery. If you or a loved one is challenged by opioid use disorder, you can find additional information at aaip.org.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. There's still time to get in on our conversation about the future of the Keystone XL pipeline. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And let's go to the phone lines. We've got Marcella on the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation in South Dakota, tuned in on Kippy. Hey there, Marcella. Thanks for holding. What do you want to share today?
Hello. Thank you for having this program. I'm really learning a lot, and it's good to hear Faith and Madonna and the chairman from Fort Peck. I live on the Cheyenne River Indian Reservation, and as you've heard, the pipeline is going to be within a couple miles of our western border. But currently, we know that there's two large man camps that are being constructed, each within 60 miles of our border. So my question is for Faith. Do you have an update about the status of man camps in South Dakota? Because one of the things that I'm involved in at home is we organized a group called Najil to look at human trafficking, because it is happening in and around our reservation, but also violence against Native women. So I just wanted to share that and ask Faith if she has an update for us.
Yeah, thank you so much. Faith, go ahead.
Yeah, so just secondhand and from the rumblings that I've heard is that, number one, that TC Energy is assessing its legal standing, is that they're looking, and some of this has been on the news, is they're looking at what alternatives legally they might pursue, and that includes on the Canadian side. So they're looking at that. The second thing that they're looking at is what can they do in the meantime with what they have? And I know some feelers have gone out to tribes, and they are exploring other options. And our tribes have to be vigilant about this, and I want to say this word, send this word out to the elected leaders to let the people know when those feelers come in, because they have made some calls about wanting to do renewables, wind energy. So they're putting their feelers out there to try to, it's like a chess game. They've made a move and they're trying to figure out where do we move now. The third thing, and that is their investors, is what is going to happen with their investors. And I think that's where, on a, as a strategy, we need to, hopefully there's an investor listening right now. This is an act of settler colonialism from two countries that came in and literally occupied territory that was not theirs a long ago, yesterday, and today, and never again tomorrow. And so I think that we need to, the wisdom of somebody in, so the answer is in regard to murdered and missing Indigenous women, we just got to keep the pressure up because it's happening as we speak. We don't know if some, one of our relatives, and it's not just men, it's women. A young boy might be being held somewhere. So we have to just keep that on and not rest a few days, but keep at it. And I'm mindful of an elder from the Fort Hall Reservation that taught me a lesson. I was real frustrated working as a school principal out there, and I wanted this initiative, and they voted it down. And I said, why didn't they take it? There was all kinds of money. And he looked at me, and he was kind of smiling, and he chuckled. And back then, I was young, and he said, you know, you're young, and you're going to learn. But you know what? It takes us a while to get going, but once we get going, then we stop. And doesn't that sound familiar in Indian country sometimes? We get going and then we stop. So the lesson for today is that we can't stop. There's all kinds of MMIW happening that is in small industry, and we are targeted because we are hated. And it's happening. My son is starting a coffee shop in Wagner. And the majority of the town has been excited. And then 2 weeks ago, you know, after all the honeymoon, the excitement, the town support, the bank, everybody, somebody shot his window up at the coffee shop. Mm. So in some ways, it has not changed from 1800. So that's why we have to be vigilant. And Marcella, I'm glad that you brought that up, because our girls are still hurting out there as we speak. And some young, you know, men. There are a lot more men in our communities that have been raped, that the research shows. So we have to be vigilant and carry on. But we have young people like you, Marcella, and younger, even, you know, the ones that we're mentoring. So we got work to do, but the difference is that we're more united now, and we look forward to Zoom calls. We look forward to moving forward. So today is a good day.
Oh, thank you so much, Faith. It's great to hear those words of encouragement. Madonna, I want to give you a moment if there's something you wanted to respond to Marcella. Also, if you might, you know, sort of weigh in on how this fight against the Keystone XL pipeline was a little bit different than the fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline, if there was some differences. Go ahead, Madonna.
Well, you know, I think the struggle on both pipelines is just a continuation, because it started with KXL, then Standing Rock and DAPL, and now back to KXL, you know, because we're so close, the two reservations are so close that our struggles are, you know, together. And so, yeah, it's just, to me, it's just a continuation. And the strength of this whole struggle, of course, is our young. We have real young water protectors. They started out when they were teenagers, and now they're in their early 20s, and they haven't stopped. And, you know, they continue to push, not only on a grassroots level, but to the tribal council level, you know, in a good way. You know, it's just like, it's not confrontation with them. It's, you know, here's what we're doing, and we're doing it with you, you know, that type of thing. So it really helps with community workers like myself, because what we can do is provide the support, the total support to these young people. You know, we'll do what we got to do. Give us some marching orders here, and we'll support you in you know, the best way we can. So, yeah, KXL is down. And so the next one, you know, we still have to look at DAPL. DAPL and then the Line 3, you know. The struggle doesn't stop. We're all, you know, together in this, you know. Our people up north helped us, and we got to help them.
Yeah, I want to talk to Faith a little bit more about some of the other fights that are going on. We heard in the news earlier that the Dakota Access Pipeline, the courts ordered oil to stop running through that pipeline. And then, of course, Line 3 in the Great Lakes region is still an issue. But before we do that, let's take a call. We've got Robert in the Navajo Nation tuned in on KSUT. Hey there, Robert. What do you want to share today?
Yes. Let me turn off my radio.
Yeah. Go ahead.
James H. Carlton believed Navajo land might be as rich or richer in gold than California. Therefore, he opposed Colonel Canby's plans to put Indian reservations in northwestern New Mexico and northeastern Arizona because he believed deposits of gold and silver should be found. Now we have power plant megawatts, third largest power plant on the earth, which is Arizona Public Service. Coal-fired power plant, which we supply tonnages to by the day and night with the trains and the heavy equipment, multi-million dollar. So in 1863, the U.S. government escalated the war effort to remove almost all Navajos to Fort Sumner to open up Navajo land to Anglos, especially mining prospectors, as part of Manifest Destiny. So much for our gas and oil, which, you know, the attitude that Anglos can put the lands by Indians to more productive use. And this was in the fall of 1863. So now we have our highly educated and well-trained military vets who've done their apprenticeships and journeymanships and have their professional licensorships to take care of all the capital and to run our coal mines day and night. And, you know, in mining corporations on Indian lands, gold, silver were not found, but there's oil, gas, natural resources such as water and such in land. So we bring you NAPI, Navajo Agriculture Products, as well as Navajo Transitional Energy Corporation and Navajo Oil and Gas Corporation. So,
yeah.
I think
so, Robert, it sounds like you're in support of oil and gas development. And, you know, that there are many tribes out there that use oil and gas development to build their economies and to they support them and sustain their livelihoods. And so I want to throw that back to Faith. What do you say to tribes that are oil and gas tribes that, you know, probably might have been able to use either this pipeline or Dakota Access or Line 3 as an opportunity for economic development for themselves? Faith?
I think it comes down to the price that is paid with human life. So whether it's hunting, whether it's gathering, whether it's oil, whether it's solar, you always weigh the measure of life that is either enhanced or taken. And the history is that fossil fuels have harmed everybody, not just Indian lives. And so I think that's a difficulty. The second criteria that comes into play is that the shot callers and the gatekeepers of these industries are not us. We are the underlings. Even if we get employed by them, the gatekeepers have a settler colonial hierarchy where they're always in charge. We are always secondary, even if we get jobs. And so I think that's the design that we are struggling, this skirmish, this victory that we have against Keystone Pipeline is really the settler colonial hierarchy that came in and just ordered us what to do. And the feds, the ones that are employees in the federal agencies, they have a different boss now. And while Justin is on the phone, I was so excited when the Fort Peck came in full bore into the fight, because when we testified against the water permit hearings about a month ago, you know what the response was? They said, the state of Montana said that they got too many comments in the public hearing and they didn't have adequate time to sift through the hearings comments. So they were going to go ahead and grant the permit. Does that make any sense? That's an arbitrary decision that, oh, wait, I only have one employee. I can't go through all your comments, so we're just going to give the permit.
We have plenty of time to read. We're in the middle of a pandemic. We have to stay home.
Right.
I'm surprised to hear that.
And what I call that is ICDOMI decision-making, the trickster decision-making. It's like you close your eyes while I eat all your food. And so we can't close our eyes for a minute. And so I'm not going to say anything bad about tribes that end up doing that, but I know that I do know manifest destiny. I know settler colonial hierarchy, and it's always capitalism does not go well with being a good relative to the earth, the water, or our children, because we have to make these decisions based on our grandchildren's grandchildren's grandchildren. And there are a lot of movements that are pretty exciting, because I know, like, there's a coalition of Native people in the nation that are building back against fossil fuels. There's a lot of young workers in there that are, I don't like to say the word activist, because Madonna and I talked about that in the old days. We didn't really have activists. We just did what you did to take care of things for people. So we got to come up with a different term. But there's a lot of exciting, there's a group of sacred sites people through Native Organizer Alliance. We're making some statements and bringing together, because we worry about bear's ears. We worry about oak flats. We worry about all of these sacred sites that are literally being destroyed. And we're so inflicted by Trump's trickster attack. I mean, he was just like search and destroy. And so now we're recovering. We're going to have to go back to the prayers and consolidate. And not is the last thing that we want to do is fight each other. And so we got some time to think and strategize. So I'm excited about these statements that we're trying to get into the Biden administration and to work together with all levels, whether it's elected, treaty, grassroots, grandma, grandpa, and most importantly, the young ones.
Oh, thank you so much for that, Faith. I really appreciate it. Justin, we're just right at the end of the hour. Anything else you want to share? Any final thoughts?
No, I'd just like to say thank you for the invite on this call, and thank you for Faith and Madonna for the insight, and I hope everybody's doing well. Thank you.
Thanks, Justin. And Madonna, what about you? What are you thinking about as we wrap up the show today?
Well, of course, I'm glad to be here and be able to be a part of the program. But, the update process and the ongoing work is always exciting to me, you know. And the young man from New Mexico, you know, just thinking, wow, that kind of workforce and educated people and stuff that are doing that for the fossil fuel industry, hey, switch, you know, do that for renewables. Solar, you know, wind, come on, you know, you guys got the brain power and the human resources, you know, go for it. And so thank you so much. I really enjoyed this program. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to have you on the line today. And Faith, we're just at the end of the hour, but where can folks learn more about this? Like, let's say this is the first time in 13 years that they've heard about the Keystone XL pipeline. Where would you like to direct them to learn more?
I think that the Promise to Protect with 350.org has some background information, and we consolidate to do press releases. So there's a lot of organizations like them, Native Organizer Alliance, Indigenous Environmental Network, Braveheart Society. There's a lot of people that are organizing against this and have been for years. So, and then Bold Nebraska, our allies in Nebraska, they, Jane Klebb keeps pretty well up on things. So, and we're all working together. The important thing is we're working together.
All right. Thank you so much to our guests today, Faith Spotted Eagle, Madonna Thunderhawk, and Justin Dupree. We're back tomorrow with our January Music Maker. We'll hear from the creative musician, Bryden Gwiss. I'm senior producer Monica Brain. Have a good one. Thank you.
Native America Calling is supported by Oregon State University eCampus. The strength that comes from your tribal community can make all the difference in reaching your goals. Oregon State eCampus is committed to providing another source of strength with a supportive educational community that respects your culture. Earn your degree online, but not on your own. Visit ecampus.oregonstate.edu/Native America Calling.
Tahis nitsetan tihiela nytan hetega itse ytetia satisa i noti kaskoli taneltoti tohi tetete ale osta tajelti hiela nytan hetega i tatlanoheta niauja ajela nytan hetega anaksestiski naski yget stela at healthcare.gov ale 1-800-318-2596 he a getanosa Medicare ale Medicaid unadalka i.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.